This is the Frogcast.
Weekend for the Horned Frog, so we are excited to welcome on another special guest. We welcome David Oven, who has covered the Big 12 for many, many years, and he has graciously agreed to come on here with us on the Frogcast and talk about all things TCU and the Big 12. David, thank you so much for being here with us tonight.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me.
David, you know, when you look at the Frogs this season, they've battled the injuries, you know, with my purple, you know, tinted glasses on, I see a team that's 7-0, you know, undefeated. They've had problems on defense with the injuries, but they've still fought through it with, you know, high-powered offense, a Heisman candidate, quarterback. You know, what is your assessment from the outside looking in on the Frogs? How do you see this team? Because, you know, like I was saying, I view them one way, but then, you know, other people say, look at all these close wins on the road and in general against, you know, teams that are not that great. So what is your thought on what we've seen from TCU so far this season?
Well, I think they're obviously a flawed team, and the injuries are a huge part of that. I mean, they're going to have to outscore people. I think Gary Patterson realizes that. And I think really the offense realizes that. They've had to do it already a few times this year. The two road games jump out, and you know, letting Iowa State put up as many points as they did has to be a little concerning. But that's sort of who TCU is. I mean, when you're trying to replace, you know, six or seven starters on the defense, then you lose, you know, eight when you start the season, and a couple of those guys have come back since. But, you know, the reality is you're not going to be in the same you know, you're not going to have a defense that's at the same level as you did last year. So, you know, I think the odds are probably in favor of TCU taking a loss at some point, but, you know, them running the table wouldn't be insane either. You know, it all kind of comes down to the last month of the season when everything will shake out in the Big 12, and they get Baylor at home, and then that'll be a absolute classic of a game. I think a one-loss TCU team will be sort of, I think, in the same spot they were last year, sort of right on the cusp. It's going to be close. An undefeated TCU or a Baylor team, no question, gets into the playoff. And like I said, I think the odds probably favor a loss, but, you know, both teams, I think, still have a shot to go undefeated.
A lot of the talk as far as Heisman goes has been, you know, Leonard Fournette out at LSU having a great season. Frog fans see Trevon Boykin, you know, having a great season, basically putting his team on the back, on his back, him and Josh Dotson. Is there anything you think that he can do to win the Heisman this year? Or is it basically he's just playing for second place?
No, I mean, if TCU keeps winning and he puts up these kind of numbers, and obviously I think if LSU takes a loss and Leonard Fournette stops putting up, you know, 200 a game as they hit the bulk of the SEC schedule, I think he'll be right there. I'll have a great shot to win. It would help if LSU would take a loss. You know, I think the win-loss may be not as important for a running back as it is for a quarterback, flawed as the metric may be. If TCU keeps winning and he puts up, you know, these kind of numbers, I mean, you look at his numbers, you compare what they were, you know, to Johnny Manziel, to RG3, they're competitive, if not, you know, exceeding what those guys have done. And so, especially when you look at what TCU has gone through defensively and what he has to do to carry TCU to a spot where they are 12-0, you know, if they get to that spot and he doesn't have, you know, a rough game where he throws two, three picks and TCU ends up losing, I think that would probably knock him out. Maybe not knock him out. He might still go to New York, but I don't think he'd have a great shot to win. So right now, yeah, I think he's probably sitting comfortably in second place. It's still a little early. I think a lot's going to change in November. Yeah, I mean, if Leonard Fournette sort of comes down to earth a little bit, and instead of, you know, averaging 200 a game, he's averaging closer to 100 a game, Boykin will have his chances, and he's got big stages late in the season to do it. You know, Oklahoma, Baylor, Oklahoma State, big games, and those games that are going to sort of ultimately shape how TCU's season is viewed. I mean, the Heisman's sort of there for the taking.
You mentioned the Oklahoma game and the Baylor game coming up. The Frogs' final five games outside of Kansas are really tough. You know, two trips up to Oklahoma, at Oklahoma, and at Oklahoma State. Then you've got, you know, West Virginia coming up this week at home, and then to close the season out at Baylor at home. I guess kind of how do you see that, you know, final stretch shaking out for the Frogs? And if there is a game, I guess, you know, on the schedule, is there one more than the other that should worry Frog fans? Is it going to Stillwater? Is it going to Norman? I mean, we all know Baylor at the end is going to be a huge one, but I know, are you sold on Oklahoma State? Kind of what are your thoughts on how this, you know, final stretch shakes out for the Frogs?
Well, I think Stillwater, especially with the kind of defense that Oklahoma State is playing this year, Stillwater is always intriguing. But I tell you what will be really, really interesting, and I think, you know, right now I think ESPN's metrics sort of give Oklahoma a 60% chance to win that game, which feels a little high. I think Oklahoma's been a little shaky, but, you know, I think maybe that revenge factor plays into that for the Sooners a little bit. Fresh off getting a little bit of revenge on Tech for Baker Mayfield's sake this weekend. But I think what's really interesting is if Baylor and TCU do get to the last weekend of the season and they're both undefeated, I'm intrigued to see what the committee does to the loser of that game if it's a close game. Because you could have a situation where, you know, I remember a few years ago when Ohio State and Michigan played a number one and a number two game. It's a little bit different in the BCS because you only got two teams getting in. But, you know, if both those teams are undefeated and your only loss is to another team in the playoff that's a close loss, that would be very interesting to see if the Big 12 does indeed get two teams in. But I think no question that's the game that's going to be the most difficult for TCU to win. Baylor's offense just blitzes people, and we'll see what happens with the Seth Russell injury, and if he's back or just exactly how long he'll be out. I think when you see them so quickly moving Chris Johnson back to quarterback, that probably does not bode well for Seth Russell's long term prognosis. But we'll see, and we'll see when he's back ready to play. But yeah, looking at that Baylor game, that's the one that certainly will be even at home. The toughest for them. I think they match up really well against Oklahoma. I'm not sure Oklahoma State has the offense to keep up with them, but it'll be fun to watch either way.
I know it's a long way to go, but you know, if we're in Las Vegas right now and I give you $100 and you got to put it down on a bet, who are you taking as the Big 12 champion this year?
Well, am I allowed to wait and see Seth Russell's medical prognosis?
I think it's questionable.
If he only misses a game or two, I'd probably still take Baylor. I think they're a more complete team. The defense is better. Offensively, they're doing what they do. So much balance. And defensively, they've been able to get some takeaways. I'd probably take Baylor right now just because of all those injuries on TCU's front. But, you know, if Seth Russell's hurt and they've got to rely on Stidham, I think Stidham, he's capable, but is he reliable? We've seen him. He's the most talented quarterback that Art Briles has ever had in terms of just raw talent at Baylor. Can he, you know, I think develop eventually? You know, if you're not talking about a guy like a Seth Russell coming in this year who'd been in the system for 4 years, you're talking about a true freshman. So there's a lot to do there. I think there's no question for me. If Seth Russell isn't on the field on Black Friday, I'm taking TCU for sure.
Okay, David, coming into this week as TCU's coming up on playing West Virginia, I was wondering how you thought, since we both got in about the same time into the Big 12, I was wondering to see how you thought both programs have been doing so far, and then maybe how do you see how that would be continued?
Well, I think for sure, you know, TCU, both of them got off to rough starts, but TCU, with, you know, winning a title has obviously sort of stepped up there. The men's basketball thing is somewhat of an issue, but not as big for TCU, just being sort of not even in the same stratosphere as the rest of the Big 12. But when you win big in football, that erases a lot of sins. And I think that's the case for TCU. So no question, you know, I think when the Big 12 brought in West Virginia and TCU, I think they thought both of those teams, not perennially, but could frequently challenge for the Big 12 title. TCU, you know, they're on the road to doing that in half the seasons that they've been in the league, and West Virginia still sort of looking for their first time being a real contender. So you'd have to lean TCU there. You know, I thought coming in, I thought West Virginia was probably better prepared in the immediate term to compete in the Big 12, but I thought TCU in the long term it would pay off more for them, and I think you're seeing that play out. TCU, they've seen a much bigger recruiting bump as Big 12 members than West Virginia's had. I mean, you look at them, you know, stealing a running back like Kyle Hicks. Even when you talk about guys like Aaron Green, does Aaron Green transfer to TCU still if they're not in the Big 12, or does he look elsewhere? I mean, it's already paying off dividends, and that's sort of what I see playing out for TCU. I think I said when West Virginia joined the league originally, you know, if they didn't get a Big 12 title that first season when they had Tavon Austin and Geno Smith, I thought it would be a long time before they could do it, and that's sort of playing out. But TCU, I thought it was in better shape to have more success once they were able to get some of that depth that they needed in, and you've sort of seen that come to fruition.
What do you see, looking forward to the game coming this week, how do you see that playing out? You know, it's a home game for TCU, but it is on a Thursday, and West Virginia, not looking as good as I thought. They lost their defense, best defensive guy. I was just curious to get your thoughts on the upcoming game.
Well, I'll be there Thursday night. I think it's really going to get ugly. I think West Virginia, after three games, you know, you kind of started to look and say, you know, these guys kind of remind me of TCU last year, putting up good offensive numbers, grabbing a bunch of takeaways, but they really have fallen apart. And I think when you look at Gary Patterson and what he can do scheme-wise, even though TCU's defense has struggled, I like him to be able to take advantage of Skylar Howard's sort of run of being turnover prone. I think you're going to see that come into play. I think TCU wins that turnover battle, wins pretty convincingly, probably somewhere from 14 to 20 points. I'd say TCU. It's tough, especially traveling midweek for West Virginia. It's going to be a fun Thursday night in Fort Worth, I think.
David, TCU's in their fourth year in the Big 12, and it seems like there's an annual tradition every summer of the talk about the next imminent demise of the conference. You've covered the conference for years, first with ESPN and then with Fox Sports, and now with what you're doing now. What do you see as the future of the Big 12? Will it ever get beyond kind of the ongoing soap opera and posturing? And I guess the bluntest way to say it is there a Big 12 that includes at least these 10 teams past the grant of rights?
You know, if I had to bet on it, I would probably say no. But you never really know. There's so many moving parts in all this. And I think the biggest thing working against the Big 12 is that it really is sort of a marriage of convenience in a lot of ways. You know, for as badly as TCU wanted to be in the Big 12, you know, you look at West Virginia. West Virginia just needed a soft place to land after the Big East fell apart and the ACC didn't look like it was going to happen for them. And the Big 12 was that. But, you know, like I said, it has been sort of a marriage of convenience. And you look at how much of an undercurrent of discontentment there is. You know, Texas obviously is in the league mostly because the league was allowed them to have the Longhorn Network. You know, Oklahoma pretty much just wanted to be with Texas and didn't believe that the Pac-12 was necessarily the best place for them. Also, with them not wanting to leave Oklahoma State behind, I think that sort of lowered the odds that the Pac-12 would want to make Oklahoma part of something, you know, called the Pac-16. So as far as how that plays out exactly, that's tough to predict. But, you know, I think if you ask me whether or not the Big 12 would exist in 15 years, I would probably say no, but, you know, I don't think it would surprise me if it did still hang around in some form. I just think, you know, the Big 12 right now is enjoying some level of kumbaya, but when you that sort of, like I was saying, that undercurrent of discontentment, you just don't see that in a lot of other leagues. And even though it's sort of barely simmering and not really a factor right now, you know, a lot can happen in 10 years. So that's where I think the Big 12 stands right now.
If you were the commissioner for a day and had unlimited power, what one or two bold moves do you think the conference could or should make that could secure a future that would you know, make the Big 12 thrive and do something more than just kind of be a posturing soap opera every offseason between ADs and university presidents?
Well, it's tough because I think the Big 12 really missed the boat with the conference network in some form. Maybe that's not necessarily a 24-hour network, but something online. But the problem is you can't do that without upsetting Texas, who sort of holds the key to the Big 12's future in their hands. And so, you know, the prudent thing for the Big 12 to do would be to blow up the Longhorn Network, restart, you know, and sort of rehash all these third-tier rights into a conference network of their own. But that's extremely difficult when you look at how many different contracts the Big 12 has. It's really hairy with the IMG deals, the Fox deals that everybody has, and then obviously Texas. You know, Texas has zero motivation to do that. You know, I talked to a few ADs who have told me in the past that idea has come on the table, but it gets shoved off the table very quickly just because it's not realistic. But if that were me, you know, in that seat and you could sort of do those things in a vacuum, no question that if the Big 12 could sort of scrap that and find a way to have a conference network instead of the Longhorn Network, it would do a wonders for the long-term security. But nothing does. Nothing is worse for the Big 12's long-term security than upsetting Texas. So it's kind of a catch-22 there.
Absolutely, it is. Well, David, to send you out, we want to put you on the hot seat here. You are on the playoff selection committee, and we are projecting forward with your predictions. Who are the four teams that you see getting into the playoff, predicting forward with who you think is going to win and how all that's going to shake out? Who are your top four come December?
So the four I think will be there?
Yes.
All right, I'm going to go I'll say if Seth Russell's healthy, I'll go with Baylor. If not, I will go TCU from the Big 12. I don't think both of them will get in. And then I think based on – I think Clemson can run the table. I'm taking Clemson. And then I will go LSU and Stanford. I think Ohio State loses to Michigan in the last game of the season. And so your final four there would be Baylor, Clemson, LSU, and Stanford.
Great. We appreciate you sharing that. You know, I listen to your podcast every week, Flyover Country. Take a second and just tell us where you're at now and what you're doing with the content that you're still putting out.
Well, it's great. It's been fun. It's sort of just an independent podcast. I'll sort of offer my thoughts on the league. I have guests every week, sometimes media guests, sometimes players guests. We've had Barry Switzer on there. Just interesting people that know the league well and know teams well. And then I have my picks on there, and it's pretty you know, it's pretty standard stuff. It's been fun. It's been a learning experience and a great time for sure.
Well, I hope everybody will find a way to check you out. You can find that on iTunes. I got it on my phone. Listen to it Tuesday mornings on the way to work. So, David, we want to thank you for coming on the Frogcast and sharing your thoughts with us, and we will hold your feet to the fire on those four picks, because whether Seth Russell is healthy or not, I think the three of us might disagree with you on one of those picks, but we're all unbiased. We're totally objective. We have no subjectivity on a TCU podcast at all. So
for sure.
For sure. Well, thank you so much for coming on, David. It means a lot to us that you're willing to take your time here to share with us all the stuff that you know about the Big 12.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Thank you. For David Evan, we want to thank him for being on here. For Trey Fallon, for Daniel Southern, I'm Jeff Mitchell. Thank you for listening to the Frogcast.